Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series, by VeloFix.com, the coolest mobile bike shop around, by the ATVSwimSpas.com, the official training vessel for six-time Ironman World Champion Dave Scott, by our Challenged Athletes Foundation. We have raised over $80 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. You can go to DonateCAF.com. Just recently, we sent out 2,448 grants, totaling $3.7 million. Again, to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. You can check out any of our interviews on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here. Our next guest, Laura Siddle, has just won Ironman Australia. How you doing, Laura?
I'm very well, thank you, Bob. Thanks for having me on.
Well, first of all, a little bit of a jet lag. When did you get home?
I landed in San Francisco this morning. So, at about 9:30. So I'm surviving the day. I'm doing okay at the moment. I've just had the one coffee, which I think is okay, and I'll see how long I last this evening and hopefully just crash out tonight and sleep well.
And you'd been gone for how long from leaving San Francisco before you got back?
Yeah, I left the States probably, September time, really, and went over to Australia for the 70.3 World Champs.
Yeah.
I sort of dipped back to Hawaii a couple of times. I was back in October just training and to obviously watch the World Champs last year, and then we have a Purple Patch training camp in January. Came back to Hawaii for a couple of weeks then. But, yeah, really since, that sort of September time, I've been predominantly based in New Zealand for the summer down there.
So when you went back into your coffee shop, they remembered your order.
They did, and my name. I was quite impressed, especially because I probably sort of have big black bags under my eyes and look fairly tired from travel. I'm not sure whether that's a good thing or not that they then recognized me.
They're like, wait, we haven't seen you in X number of months. That's pretty good, man. So when people remember your name and you haven't been there forever since September, it's like, whoa, that's pretty darn good.
Or it shows how much of a regular I was when I was there.
Exactly. Or that puts you in a position where you try to change your order and you're like, no, you always get this. You can't be changing.
That's right. It's already on the countertop ready, and I decided I wanted something else. But no, it was great. It was quite a nice welcome back, actually.
So when I look at your background, engineering, consultant, born in England, you were an athlete though growing up, but not at a serious level, more of a recreational level.
Yeah, sport was always seen as a hobby, really. Or I did sport always as a hobby.
Yeah.
Loved all sports and sort of did as much as I can, but very much as the additional to school and university. And I think I just sort of never really appreciated it. It could be full time at that stage, or you could do it professionally, and just went down the traditional path or got on the conveyor belt of sort of going through school and getting A levels and going to university and that sort of thing.
Well, I look track and field, netball, hockey, swimming, tennis. I mean, you basically did everything. What the heck is netball?
It's always a good one bringing that out in America. Netball, it's played in Commonwealth countries mainly.
Yeah.
I guess the best way to describe it, it's very similar to basketball.
Okay.
You don't have a backboard behind the net, so it's just a
throwing into the net.
A pole with a hoop on the top. Yeah.
Ah,
and you have seven players on a team, and they're restricted to certain areas of the court, and you can't bounce or move with the ball, and a few rules like that. But it's pretty similar to basketball. It's probably the easiest way to describe it.
It sounds like hurdles were 400 hurdles. It was because you represented Britain at junior. At a high junior level, do you think that was one of your better sports?
Yeah, athletics probably. I started doing hurdling and sprints, I guess, when I was really young, so about 11, and represented England at the 300 meter hurdles, which was sort of the junior event.
Right.
But I guess in my later years of doing athletics, I mainly was doing the 400 flat and the 800 meters, and abandoned the hurdles because it was just it was too complicated, and they kept sort of scaring me or beating me as I would, you know, trying to get your stride length right. And
exactly.
When you clatter one of those hurdles and come down, it's
not
pretty
good.
Painful.
So, mechanical engineering, were you also an officer in the British Army?
Yeah, that's right. So I did a gap year commission between, so it was after I'd finished my school, high school, I guess, converting it here, and before I started university, it was
right.
a one-year commission in the British Army, and probably still is one of the best years of my life, just, you know, the experience and exposure you got being 18, 19 years of age, but in the military, and, you know, on paper, you're the officer and you're in charge of 30 or 40 men and women
wow.
who are, you know, a lot older than, well, various ages,
sure.
some older, some younger, but obviously have a huge amount of experience. So you go up pretty quickly and learnt a lot about, you know, respect to the soldiers and for their knowledge and the value that they added. It was just a fantastic year. I look back very favorably and have fond memories of that year.
And were you in engineering then in the military?
Yes, I was. I was in the Royal Electrical and Mechanical Engineers and attached to a Royal Artillery Regiment.
Wow.
And actually based in Germany. Yeah, so we had the artillery. It was high-velocity missiles, so land-to-air missiles, which were... Yeah, pretty cool.
Very cool. I mean, not many professional triathletes who work with missiles, right? You know, I mean, I think you're sort of in a small group. And then you work for Shell in the UK. And what brought you to Australia for the first time?
Yeah, so after the gap year, I started my degree in engineering, and at the end of that 4 years, got a job with Shell in the UK, and was working there for 3 years on one of the oil refineries that they had in the northwest of England, and through Shell got an opportunity to do a 2-year placement over in Australia. I'd always wanted to go, probably just because of the sporting element and that Australia being so well known for its sport. So when I got offered the placement, jumped at the chance and moved over to Australia and to Sydney, and kind of was pinching myself that I'd lucked out with this amazing opportunity. And it was a 2-year placement. At the end of the 2 years, Shell tried to send me back to the UK, and I was having far too much fun in Australia, so sort of said thanks very much, but I think I'll stay here.
And while you're in Australia, obviously the endurance capital of the world, that's when you connected and did a 90K bike ride and sort of fell in love with the world of endurance?
Yeah, that's right. I started trying to do the athletics again when I moved to Australia, but just didn't find a group I could really connect and gel with. I had a great group back in Manchester in England, and it was a good bunch of friends as well as training hard, but didn't sort of find that in Australia, and joined a group of friends from work on this 90K bike ride, sort of, I think buying a bike the week beforehand, and which is sort of a hybrid road mountain bike, and was just wearing my trainers and probably just shorts and t-shirt. I don't think I owned any Lycra cycling kit at that point at all. And just really enjoyed it. And I can't say I found it easy, but it was certainly sparked something. And off the back of that, a friend from work just suggested I give triathlon a go. You know, it's such a huge sport over there. So, you know, whereas in England, you probably wouldn't consider it as a sport to give a go at all, really. That's changed
at that stage,
now,
right?
With
the Brownleys and everything,
and Chrissy and a lot of the women in the field, Chrissy and Helen Jenkins and gosh,
Rachel.
Could name hundreds of them now. But at that stage, when I was doing sport, it wasn't really something I hadn't even heard of it, to be honest. I hadn't even considered it. So the first time I actually saw triathlon was at the 2008 Beijing Olympic Games, and I was lucky enough to be over there watching and just happened to score a ticket to this event called triathlon. And I was like, okay, well, I'll go along to that. And that was my first exposure to the sport.
So,
and then it was, I guess, a year later that I was searching out for a beginner's course in Sydney, and signed up and, yeah, sucked in, really, from there.
And one of your first coaches was the infamous Spot Anderson?
He will love that you have mentioned
it. I covered Spot for a lot of years. He raced everywhere. That guy was one of my favorites.
He gets a mention everywhere. You can't go to any race or any event without him getting a mention, just if he's in the crowd or even if he's not doing huge amounts of competing these days. But even just there on the watching and supporting the announcer or the commentator, somebody will spot him and he always gets a mention.
It's pretty easy. He sort of sticks out a little bit.
He does, yes. Either in, and if he doesn't stick out, you can hear him before you can probably see him.
Absolutely. So you're doing this recreationally. I'm assuming you're doing a couple races. Was there a point where you thought, you know what, this could be more than just a hobby. I could be pretty good at this.
I was doing it as a hobby, and I mean, being sporty all my life and sort of pretty competitive with myself at that, you know, I threw myself into the triathlon, and obviously having a little bit of coordination and sporting background, then when you pick up a new sport, you suddenly, you know, you get the buzz and get sucked in because you're making huge improvements straight away, albeit because, you're going from being a complete rookie and a beginner.
Right.
But it wasn't, I mean, it was still very much the hobby, and, you know, I had my corporate career, but I loved the sport, and it was taking up a lot of my time. And I think, you know, being in Australia as well and being away from sort of family, it was easy to throw myself into the sport. The group that I was training with, Spots Group Bondi Fit, was an incredibly social group as well. So it was never a chore. It was always good fun going to all the training sessions because there was a great bunch of people there. But it wasn't really till, I guess, 2013 and qualifying for the 70.3 World Champs and then winning there and winning in London at the Olympic Distance World Champs a week later that I started to probably really consider that it could be an option to give this sport a go.
And at that point, when you turned pro, how old were you?
It was 33, 34.
Wow.
34, yeah. I'd only started the sport when I was 28, 29.
Yeah, I was looking at that going, wait a second. I think she was like 28, 29 when she started this. And so turning pro at 32, 33. You don't see that many folks people get into the sport late all the time, but getting into it as a pro, the nice thing about getting into it as a pro at that age is it's fun, right? It's brand new. It's like, gosh, you don't have any miles on you. It's everything you accomplish is just for fun, and you have a real career along with that.
Yeah, that's right. And I guess the reason why, you know, obviously I got into the sport late, but then the reason why it took me, you know, a few more years to make that leap was, you know, I did still feel so new into the sport, and I did still feel such a beginner, even sort of in 2013, that was sort of moving up to the longer distance. You know, I still felt I had so much to learn, and it was quite a big step up to then racing professionally.
Right.
But it was just a case of, well, because I'm that bit older, it's kind of now or never. If I don't make the commitment now, I'm going to run out of years to get to the right level sort of before the body starts packing up and I have to return to the corporate world.
Well, you know, it's very, to be honest, it's very similar to Chrissy Wellington. I mean, Chrissy really didn't get into it until later and came in and was this meteor that streaked across the sport and then was out, you know, there 4 or 5 years and boom, gone. So coming into it, when did you do your first pro race?
So I did my first pro race, I guess, early 2014, I think it was.
And now at that point, did you decide, I'll focus on the 70.3, I'll focus on Olympic distance? What were you thinking?
So, it was definitely the 70.3 distance. I think people had suggested earlier that I turn professional, but at that stage I was still, when I was an amateur and an age grouper, but I was still doing the Olympic distance. But the only really options turning professional, the Olympic distance is racing on the ITU circuit, which one, my swim was never going to cut it to start with.
Right.
the bike, my strength was the bike, but in TT and not sort of the pack riding, so that wasn't a huge benefit. And also, I was just so much older, there was no way I'd be accepted into, I guess, the development systems that British Triathlon or the other organizations have. And probably, ultimately, you know, I knew and my coach knew that the longer endurance distance would be more suited to my skills and ability. So it was probably the natural step to move up and focus on the 70.3 to start with.
So when you look at 2014, 2015, when you look at a race where, gosh, this was the race that sort of told me I belonged, that this was the right decision to go pro and race at this level?
To be honest, probably not until much later, actually, probably more like the races in 2016 and 2017, like this
year.
Where
you got second in Taupo and Wanaka in New Zealand.
Yeah, those first few years were pretty tough from that sort of mental aspect and physically just adjusting to being a professional and what that meant and, you know, having to be another step up in performance but at every race rather than, whereas sort of as an age group or an amateur, I tended to sort of pick just one or two races to peak at, which was great, but here you were suddenly, the whole level had jumped up a bar and you had to be sort of more consistently at that level. And just learning to race as well, you know, with my swim not being as strong as the other elements, sort of then being able to, you know, often finding you on your own on the bike for the 90 kilometers or the 56 miles sort of thing and being okay with that and how do you cope with that. So those first few years, as well as sort of moving to the States and, you know, finding out how I work together with Matt Dixon and what works, what doesn't work, and all those sort of things. Probably, you know, there were a lot of questions at that point going, have I made the right decision? You go through the questions of what are other people thinking? Oh, you know, she quit the corporate world and moved to the other side of the world to be a professional. What was she thinking? And she's not sort of winning. Because I think a lot of people, like, especially they see you winning as an age grouper and they assume you're going to be winning
as a pro
when you step up, because perhaps on paper in a race you might have beaten some pros.
Right.
But it's so
different,
it's
game.
Different. It's a different game, different race completely. And
totally.
So all those doubts go through your head about what other people are thinking, which, you know, and I know myself, it's irrelevant. It should be irrelevant what other people are thinking, but it's just, yeah, so I think there wasn't a race, I don't think, really, in those first 2 years. I mean, I look back now as well at those 2 years and the races I did and just, gosh, completely different place to where I am today.
Right. And what was the difference? Was Matt Dixon a big part of the difference?
Yeah, for sure. Matt Dixon and his sort of coaching partner, Paul Buick as well, specifically working on the bike. And I think just trusting them, trusting the process, being patient with it, and yeah, just having the belief and the trust that things would work out in the end. And I was still making those progressions, and if I just kept in with the day to day and just being consistent with my training, that the improvements would come, and then the results would come after that, sort of thing.
I mean, that's a big commitment, saying, okay, I'm liking this sport. I think I'll just move to the States and really commit. I mean, that's a big move to pack up the career and come to San Francisco, and you're all in on this.
Yeah, that's right. I made the decision when I was going to turn professional that if I was going to do it right. I wanted to do it properly.
And
go all in. Just, and partly of that was because of that age thing, and, you know, coming into the sport later, it was, you can't waste any years doing this half-heartedly. You've got to fully commit. So, I mean, probably if I'd thought too long about the decision, I'd probably talk to myself out of it, because I'd have just said it's not financially viable or et cetera, and made up lots of excuses along those lines. But I think it was one of those moments where the spontaneity came out in me, and that wanting to do something a little bit risky and take a chance and take a leap. And I just thought, well, you know, if it doesn't work out, I'll work something out. I can, and end of the world, I'll go back to the UK, I'll go back to mum and dad, or I'll come back to Australia, or right. I'll pick up the corporate job again. But if I don't give it a go, if I don't give it a try, then I'm never going to know if it was what could have been.
Now, you come from a background where education is important, and you're on a career path, and you become a mechanical engineer, besides shooting missiles. When you go to the folks and say, oh, you know what, I know I've done all this education stuff, it's really cool, but I think I might want to wear Lycra and swim, bike, and run for a few years and see if I can make a living doing that. How'd that go over?
I think by the time I sort of made that decision, they'd kind of come to terms with it. I think they'd seen it sort of building over the few years. So, you know, they've been incredibly supportive, and I think... Again, when I first moved to Australia, I know that sort of hurt my mum and my sisters and stuff. But you know, they just want to see me doing something that makes me happy.
Right.
I think my dad was more, worried when I left, when I resigned from Shell. But was staying in Australia. You know, he's from the generation that, you know, his father worked for the same company as he worked for, and you stayed with that company all your life and all your career. And one thing I remember him saying to me was, when I was sort of said to him, oh, I'm thinking about leaving Shell and resigning from Shell, and I look for another job in Australia, was, but, you know, they're a big multinational company and they have a great pension scheme.
Right.
And that was, I think, his worry and concern.
Sure.
But, then sort of over the years, I guess they saw the triathlon becoming much more part of my life. And, you know, they've been great. Like I said, very supportive. They've come out to some of the races, or we tend to meet sort of partway around the world at some of the races. So that's been really good as well. I think hopefully they're probably about used to it by now.
Now, did they come to Port Macquarie?
They didn't come to Port Macquarie, no. They were at Ross last year.
Ah, Ross, only the greatest race in the world.
Yeah, just because it's a little bit easier to get to the Europe and Germany from the UK.
Right.
And they're coming to Kona in October, so that was no pressure at all. They'd actually booked their accommodation October last year. And I did point out to them that I needed points to qualify, and there was no guarantee that I was going to get there, but... So I guess they had a bit of faith in me, or maybe they just wanted a holiday regardless.
So did Ironman Australia, is that what that guarantee you a spot in Kona?
Yeah, it should do now. So that should give me enough points to just be
Sweet.
Over that sort of cutoff borderline. So yeah,
love that.
So
was Ironman Australia your first Ironman win?
It was, yes. Full Ironman win and Ironman win, yes.
So, and what's cool about that is really you got into the sport in Australia. So to be able to have your first Ironman win in Australia is pretty cool.
It was. It was really special from that point of view. That Port Macquarie race, it's quite a local race for the triathletes in Sydney and in New South Wales. So a lot of friends came up to watch, which was fantastic. Spot was there as well. He made the trip, which was pretty cool. But then also just so many people were racing either in the 70.3 or the full distance the same day, or had come up to watch their respective friends and training partners. But people that had seen me as a complete beginner and knew me as a complete beginner and had seen me progress with me through, though, you know, we'd done so many, had done the same races together. And so it made it incredibly special to have all those familiar faces and all the support out there on course, and just the messages I received before the race and after it's been pretty overwhelming, but incredibly humbling, and very special indeed.
Well, and I think the way people relate to you is, think about how many age groupers are like, man, I want to be a pro. Look at my times. I'm not that far off. I could compete with those guys. And I think people are maybe living a little vicariously, going, look at Laura. She just, you know, she got into this. She's mid-30s. She decided that she's going for this, going pro, and she just won Ironman Australia. That's like the coolest thing ever. I think that's so fun.
Yeah, I mean, I hope it does inspire people. I mean, I've I've got so much out of sport throughout my whole life. You know, it's given me so many amazing opportunities, and you develop so many skills from doing sport, whether that's individual and triathlon or team sports as well, that, you know, through what I've done and taken that leap and stuff, I do hope that it does inspire people, and whether that's for them to take a leap in sport, it may be or it might not be, or even just within their corporate careers or their lives of going, actually, I'm going to take a chance and do something that, you know, I might not have thought about before.
So the goal obviously is to get to Kona, and it sounds like you're there for this year. Now, you went last year to watch?
Yeah, it's been the last couple of years to watch and support, yeah.
What do you think from watching it? Because one thing, I remember Chris McCormick telling me once, you know, you watch it on television, you're like, oh, my God, it's so beautiful. The music is great. There's air conditioning. You're watching it inside. And then on race day, it's like, oh, this is awful. Where's the music? Where's the air conditioning? It's hot and windy. You've been out there on the course and watched the race. What impresses you about that? Because you've done, at this point, you've done a lot of racing, right?
Yeah.
You've been second at Taupo and second at Wanaka and second Ironman New Zealand. You've been to a lot of races. But there's something special about that race. The heat, the wind, all that's great. The history is great. But the competition is just off the charts, which I think is what makes that race special.
It does. I mean, yeah, it's got that world championship title, so it brings the best of the best, and it brings people that are wanting to have their best performance on the day, and actually probably brings a lot of risk with that, because people might be prepared to take some gambles along the way.
Sure.
And then you see the explosions or the meltdowns and stuff like that. I mean, it's brutal. It really is brutal, and it really does. It's scary. It tears the best athletes in the world down, which has been a real eye-opener when you're watching the race. You know, a lot of respect for everyone who races, but just seeing athletes of amazing ability and talent and previous history of their races just literally kind of brought to their knees, because I think it just leads to people going all in for that win and taking those extra risks. And yeah, and add those conditions to it as well, with the wind and the heat and humidity. Then, why am I doing it again?
Right. And the thing is, nobody goes there. Like, when you go to Taupo, wherever you go, people are like, yeah, my real goal this year is Kona. My real goal is this or that. Nobody you see during the week leading to Kona is going, you know what, my real race, my A race is Arizona, and I'm just doing this as a long training deal. There's nobody there who's not wanting this to be the greatest day of their life. And there's probably 25 or 30 women who feel, I'm going to be top 5 or top 10 here. And it's not unrealistic for them to feel that way.
No, that's right. I mean, but I think that's possibly what the mistake, and gosh, I haven't raced there, so I'm probably going to set myself up for a fail here. But
nah.
I think, you know, putting it on that pedestal is probably the wrong
way to
go. You know, at the end of the day, it's just another race, and it's you get from A to B as fast as you can, managing what your body gives you on the day, managing the conditions, managing whatever's around you. And if you keep that focus, it's just another race, then, you know, the result will hopefully turn out well in the end. And, you know, you can only put your best performance in, and if there's 10 girls that are putting better performances, you don't have any control over that. If there's only, you know, if you're the one with the best performance at the end of the day, then there you go, sort of thing. But yeah, the build up, the hype, the history it has got does make it, you have to manage those thoughts that start cluttering your head in the weeks and leading into the race.
Well, and the nice thing is the person that you're working with, Matt Dixon, has been there a lot, right? He knows how to get people ready for that race. He knows how to keep them from, you know, jumping off the cliff, which always happens about 3 weeks or so before the race. Yeah. I'm not ready. I'm not doing enough. I got to train more. I got to do more heat. All that stuff. Matt, you know, you've got exactly the right guy to keep you from going crazy. Hey, and worse it happens, you go, you know what? You can always go back to shooting missiles, right? That's always there.
Right. Maybe I'll take some with me on the day.
Exactly. You take a few missiles with, boom, you've got that going for you. So when you look back on it now, you've been a pro for a few years. Was it a great move? Was it everything you've wanted it to be?
Oh, I mean, definitely. I have no regrets for making that decision. I don't miss the corporate world, really. I love what I'm doing, and I know I'm very fortunate and have a great opportunity to get to do this. I know many people would love to do it as well. Was it everything I hoped for? I don't really think I'd given it that thought. I'm kind of not sure I knew what to expect. It was pretty much a leap in the dark, so very
sure.
much learning every year and that sort of thing. I think getting a better feel for it sort of this last year or so. But yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I guess the only, it's not really a regret. I wish I'd found the sport earlier. That's, I guess, the
yes.
only thing.
Yep.
I wish I had found triathlon earlier and had the opportunity to start and be a professional from an earlier age. I don't think maybe necessarily coming through the ITU system at all, but just, yeah, being involved
sure.
from a few years earlier and giving myself that chance. But, yeah, no regrets at all. Definitely can't complain from that front.
Well, and your folks are going to be going to Kona. I mean, that's not a bad thing.
That's right. They get all these holidays.
Exactly.
And they come and watch me race in different places.
If you were with Sue Schell, they'd be on a platform out in the North Sea somewhere, right? It's a
that's
drilling
right.
platform.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not exotic at
no.
all.
No. You never get any of that other fun stuff. So the rest of this year, what will your schedule be heading into Kona?
So I'm going to be one of these people that's actually racing quite a lot and not putting all my eggs in one basket mm-hmm. in Kona. So I actually head to Europe on Thursday, and I'm going to be racing the Challenge Series over in Europe.
Nice.
So start with the Championship, and then Challenge Herning in Denmark, Challenge Ross again. That's kind of the next big focus. And then I think Challenge Roma, Challenge Prague, and Challenge Austria.
Wow, you're going to be busy.
Yeah, so I am. So that was part of it. You know, you're in this sport once, so let's
go for it.
Gotta have fun doing it and just see what happens. So it's going to be a bit of a learning experience as well, and a gamble with racing so much, particularly having already done three full distances this year already.
Have you done three already this year?
Yeah.
On New Zealand, Australia, and what was the third one?
I did Challenge Wanaka and Ironman
right.
New Zealand. Back to back for 2 weeks.
Wow.
And then, Ironman Australia. So, you know, we're going to be really. Matt's probably going to pull me. I'm somebody who likes quite a lot of load in training.
Right. Yeah.
And I think we're going to be careful. He's going to pull a lot of that load out just because of the races I've already done and the ones coming up. And obviously with Kona at the end, because I do need to give that a lot of respect regardless.
Sure.
And I know I'm going to get itchy and things like that sort of with him taking the load out. And we've already had a brief conversation that, you know, you're not going to like it, but you've got to go with it. So, and I trust Matt and I trust Paul Buick as well. So, yeah, and it'll be a bit of an experiment, but hopefully it'll be a lot of fun along the way.
Did winning your first Ironman, did it surprise you, the reaction? I mean, a lot of times you do these sports a little bit in a sort of a little bit in the dark. You go from race to race
yeah.
to race. But when you win an Ironman, sometimes the reaction
yeah.
is it could be bigger than you think it's going to be.
Yeah, it has blown me away. I think leading into the race, you block out all the noise because you've still got to get through, a 9-hour, 10-hour day. And so much can happen in an Ironman race and so much can go wrong. And, you know, you really have to keep in your little bubble about being focused on you and your race and what you can do and what you can control. So, yeah, when you come out of that, the other side and, you know, I'm still not, you know, just trying to get through the amazing messages that people have sent me, you know, coming from all sorts of people
yeah.
that I guess have been following me or have known me at various points throughout my career. You know, friends I used to play netball with, years ago, and I guess due to the likes of Facebook and social
yes.
media, I've seen the result. And then, people I used to, did athletics with and things like that, or old school friends and things. It's been, as well as then obviously everybody in the triathlon community and some pretty big established people in the sport sort of sending messages. Super cool. Trying to process it and read them all and let it sink in and blown away, but in a really lovely way.
Well, you know what's great about the sport, and I'm sure you've already discovered this, that I think even among the pros, it's really the you against yourself and you against the course. And yes, you're competing and there's dollars and the rest of it, but I think everybody understands you can't do it without the other folks. You sort of need to push each other. So I just don't think it has that same stigma of bike racing and some of the other sports that are out there, because it really is everybody wants everybody to do well.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, you know, all the professionals, all the other women and the men, they all know what you go through over the years or over the trainings and the ups and downs that come with that. And it's not always plain sailing. But then, you know, when you do have those highs, everyone's so happy for that individual, because they probably got a big appreciation of what they've done to get there.
I used to love it back in the day. I'd be interviewing some pros and they'd be very secretive about their training. And I'd be like, you know what? I don't understand that, because the reality is nobody can do what you do. Nobody can do it and live, right? Most of us, if we tried like a week of what you guys do at the level you do it at, we would be in little pieces on the side of the road. So, you know, but there's always that, I don't want anybody to know what I'm doing, because and they'll let them do it. They'll break themselves down. It is a brutal way to make a living. But the cool part is that you've been to the other side. You had the corporate job. You had the sort of the safe, the security. Now you're traveling the world. You're getting to meet wonderful people. You're going to places like Challenge Roth, which is only the coolest venue on the planet. And then you're coming off of winning Ironman Australia. You know, I think it's wonderful what you're doing, Laura. Congratulations on all of it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, I certainly, you pinch yourself, I think, at the times when, a lot of times. It is incredible. I think the sport just brings out those people that are amazing people. And, I've met so many through traveling, and particularly because I am pretty nomadic. I'm probably one of the few triathletes in the world that is fairly global and does actually travel a lot. So I do meet a lot of people all over the place, and because of that, and because of the sport small, there's always connections, and everyone always knows somebody that you know in a different part of the world. And that it's a really cool sport to be part of, for sure.
Love it. Laura Siddle has been our guest. Hey, Laura, thanks so much for taking time. Always a pleasure to have somebody come into the sport and one, love it, two, have success, and also come to it with the background that you have. That makes it a lot more fun.
No, absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me on. I think yours, when your email popped up, it was one of the ones that took me by surprise. So it's been really great, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Again, we are brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series, by VeloFix.com, the coolest mobile bike shop around, ATVSwimSpas.com, the official training vessel for six-time Ironman World Champion Dave Scott, our Challenged Athletes Foundation. You can go to DonateCAF.com. We just sent out 2,448 grants, totaling $3.7 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on BabbittVille.com and on iTunes. And until next time, remember, endurance lives here.